Good morning, everybody. This is Turning Towards Life from Third Space Coaching. It's Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in London. And Lizzie and I are here again for week, I think, 62 of this project. And we were just talking about how gorgeous it is, come rain or shine, whatever else has been going on in our lives, to still be doing this and stepping into this. So glad to be here. Welcome, everybody. We have an extraordinary source written by Lizzie this morning for us to talk about. And morning, Lizzie.
Hello, everybody. You may have remembered when I posted this source, we had a big party in our house last night. And so I am slightly delirious. So who knows what I'm going to say and how coherent it's going to be. But I'm really up for this poem. I feel like this opportunity that we have to read each other our poems that we write, Justin, is so incredible, and something else happens every time you read me to me, supposedly me anyway, whatever it is to write something and have it come through you and then have it come back at you through somebody else's voice is quite something. So I'm looking forward to that. And just to say a little bit about where the source came from, which was a very ordinary moment. It was very early one day, and I had woken up and was on my way to a train station, and I was going very early because I didn't know what else to do with myself, because I couldn't go back to sleep again, and it was pitch black, and I was on the way. And I was just walking along this pavement, and I remember the moment, and I suddenly thought, oh my gosh, I'm done for. Like, the way I love certain people in my life leaves me so vulnerable. And out of that vulnerable space of loving people, this poem came. And so it kind of came from the crack, if you like. It came from the part that is not defended or put together or capable of defending against this kind of feeling of being in connection with one another. So I'm really glad to be reading this, all of us together. So, Justin, do you want to read first, or shall I read first?
Why don't you read first, okay, as it's yours, and then you can hear me read you back to you.
Okay.
And then we can talk.
Cool. So this is a poem called Only One Wild Way. Being broken open is the gateway to God. Letting creation in, allowing the divine, means living from a truly softened heart, and it means letting life have its way. It hurts and it's physically painful. We try to fight to keep it closed. There's only one wild way to live once you've been opened, like a can of sardines and the metal is sliced and the lid can't be put back on again. There's no shutting up shop, backing into oblivion again, not for an opened heart. Beaten around by life, by what happened, who I've become, what they did, who they are, and everything else. A heart once opened is like that forever. And maybe that's what grief is made of. The love becomes fully obvious when the body is removed from our touch, and it's hard to bear how much we love each other. It hurts to go direct. It pains to be truly and messily intimate. And as we wriggle into this space of deep connection, you know, let's ourselves excruciatingly aligned with life itself as it sears through us and wipes us out, at the same time as bringing us to life. As our shell falls away and we are mushy, smashed to smithereens, we run the bath, make dinner, what our loved ones might like for a Christmas gift. Put the bins out and carry on, with our broken hearts leaking out love just about everywhere.
It's quite something to hear you read that, Lizzie. So I'm going to read it back to you and hope that my internet connection is going to stay stable whilst you were reading. I don't know if it affects anyone else, but it was pausing a little bit. So let's hope. Only one wild way. Being broken open is the gateway to God. letting creation in, allowing the divine, means living from a truly softened heart. And it means letting life have its way. It hurts and it's physically painful. We try to fight to keep it closed. There's only one wild way to live once you've been opened, like a can of sardines, and the metal is sliced and the lid can't be put back on again. There's no shutting up shop, backing into oblivion again. Not for an opened heart, beaten around by life, by what happened, who I've become, what they did, who they are, and everything else. A heart once opened is like that forever. And maybe that's what grief is made of. The love becomes fully obvious when the body is removed from our touch, and it's hard to bear how much we love each other. It hurts to go direct, it pains to be truly and messily intimate, and as we wriggle into this space of deep connection, in all its individual and specific glory, we find ourselves unseparated, excruciatingly aligned with life itself as it sears through us and wipes us out, at the same time as bringing us to life, as our shell falls away and we are mushy. Smashed to smithereens, we run the bath, make dinner, wonder what our loved ones might like for a Christmas gift, put the bins out, and carry on with our broken hearts leaking out love just about everywhere.
Ah, so interesting and beautiful to receive that. And I think it should be a practice that when people write poems, somebody should read them back to them. I just feel really seen by you reading it. Mm. You know, I think it's such a lovely thing to receive. And it feels very real, like an everyday feeling of being me, this poem is. And so I really appreciate that Turning Towards Life exists and we get to have a chat about it. Because it's the kind of thing that most likely, I mean, I might have posted it on Sacred Rebellion, my little place where I put writing things on Facebook, but mostly these things stay in a little notebook somewhere. And they're like a little note or something. And so it's really beautiful to have this be in the world at all. And for it to feel validating or opening or acknowledging to anyone else is also a very big gift to me as well. And that's how I'm feeling right now as I listened to you.
It's quite a thing, Lizzie, to have when any of us find words that feel true. Mm. To have ourselves quoted back to ourselves. Mm. And as someone who was once an academic supervisor of mine said, and it was such a brilliant thing, I remember taking her a piece of work I've done and said, reading it on the way up, and thinking, I don't know really who wrote this. Like, it feels like it's mine, but I couldn't imagine saying exactly this right now. And her saying, well, that's the mark of writing that's important, is that in a way it's of us and it also transcends us. So when we hear our writing read back to us, we start to see ourselves and feel ourselves in a whole different light.
Yeah.
It's the wonderful gift that human beings have of being able to put thoughts, feelings, possibilities into words that then have a life of their own. So it's great to be able to read it with you and to you. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. I was really struck by what you just said, and I can't remember now exactly how you said it, but having this read back to you is like having you read your ordinariness read back to you, like your familiarity. And I immediately thought also, what a gift we humans can be to one another when we are prepared to share truthfully of our worlds. Because your ordinary world, this smashed up, broken open, no way back, filled and overflowing with feeling, grief-filled, love-filled, all of that, is not the way that I experience myself all the time. It has a different, your world has a different flavor to it, which is, of course, is so much of what makes your way of being in the world yours. And it's a huge invitation. Because I could feel immediately how much I long for so much of what you're saying, and how sometimes I have, many times I have glimpses of it, but also that it's a kind of deep longing for me, and how my own familiar personality patterns and structure have me move away from exactly what it is that you're saying. So the one line in the middle where you say, maybe this is what grief is. And I could feel, oh yeah, but my whole orientation to the world, unless I'm really, really paying attention, unless I have other people and their words to invite me, is to try and have grief, is to feel a lot of grief, which of course is love as well, as you're saying, I think. And then is to try and have it out of the way. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep this under wraps a bit or a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge, terrifyingly inviting invitation to let myself grieve, as I often, more often, find myself doing. Like, I'm at home this weekend and Davina is here and our three children are here, and I find myself grieving for them because I love them so much. So anyway, letting myself into contact with that is not the first thing that happens for me unless I pay attention. And unless, just to loop back to the thing I think I'm saying, is unless we also have one another, other human beings to point to us, this is what my world is like, how about that as an invitation?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, is that this is really frightening. You know, like being in the moment, it's like, and there, I think it's where the line, well, it's where it all comes from, but the line, you know, it means letting life have its way. There's also a kind of surrendering that's necessary in this space that is in the vulnerability, having to learn to trust life, that its very nature is benevolent and holding. Because it feels so exposed and feels so like there's nothing we can do. Like it's got us. Our life has got us. The relationships we hold, the people who are precious to us, that whole experience of being a person and loving has got us. And so, of course, we're trying to avoid that. You know, we're afraid. And all of the things I know I do to avoid this thing are right there as well. And there are many times where I'm held by this force of smashedness. And there are many times when I'm completely asleep to it because it's unbearable. And I have compassion for that part of me that's asleep to it. Because it does feel very exposed. And there's also a feeling of helplessness as well. Because in this realm, there's no controlling things. There's no parceling up the way I love you and making it manageable for myself. It's a wild, and that's why I think the word wild comes, because it feels like I have to be in some kind of abandonment like in myself, like some, okay, I'm just going to be here. Like all I can do is be here. And have faith that I'll survive this extraordinary, powerful experience. And it takes practice as well. And also, I think what I'm pointing to here is that in my life anyway, there's no way that I can sit down somewhere and not put the bins out and do the things that need doing that are all very ordinary and domestic and that hold life together on a practical level. And there's a way that that's just the thing that also is the comforting thing in this space too, is the ordinariness of making a cup of tea and having a chat and doing some domestic chore, because anything else seems a bit kind of irrelevant. So I think it comes with a love of domesticity, because it provides my being with some course of action that feels appropriate, that's not intelligent and lofty and excellent or anything worldly. It's just ordinary, step by step, going along, that feels appropriate for this state of undoneness.
Seems to me that there really is a place in the world for our grand plans, for our imagining the future and working super hard to bring about something else other than what is here. And that if we didn't do that, we wouldn't have houses and cities and schools and ideas and, you know, all of those things. So I want to make in what I'm about to say, I suppose, I'm wanting to lay out that the human capacity to transcend ourselves is super important. And we can also become a way that we turn away from, first of all, the very real pain and difficulty of being a human being, which is, you know, I think you don't say it in exactly this way, but it's so apparent to me in your words here. We'll lose everybody. Mm. And we'll also watch people we love suffer, and they'll watch us suffer, and it's totally unavoidable in the end. So can we not have our wish to bring about things, to strive for things in the world, can we not have it be a cover up for this? And can we learn to live in all of our grand schemes and plans with this, mm-hmm. which brings our grand schemes and plans into a whole other light as well? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, can we find a way to not forever fall into the paralysis of the grief, which any of us can be in when it really hits us what the deal is here, the unavoidable deal of this extraordinary and totally unlikely life and what will come of it. And I'm very struck that putting the bins out is actually the middle way. It's actually the way that we turn towards all of it, because domesticity is, you know, washing the dishes, putting the bins out, making the bed, you know, whatever it is our way of taking care right here of how things might be, of improving things, because you could not put the bins out, and you could not make the bed, and you could not wash the dishes. So our small acts of improvement are really, really important, and they bring us right in contact with the immediacy of our own bodies, the care for what's around us. And I also just got thinking about, it's not easy to do, but when we can be domestic with all of this present for us. So it's in the act of washing the dishes, putting the bins out, which might look so boring in a way, but also why does any of that exist? It exists because of everything you're saying in your poem. It exists because people care for one another. It exists because we have lives that we were given. And it exists because it matters to us how things turn out.
Yeah, and it also occurs to me that this, to live, that you said to live with this, there's also a possible way that we can live from this in the dishwashing and live from this in our decision making, and allowing this to be here for me feels like a way of informing a life. So having all my decisions hang off of this, having all my ways through things be related to this, and letting this infuse all of that dishwashing and bin putting out, and seeing what I can do to integrate this into whatever it is that I am up to in the world. And I love what you say about the reason it exists anyway is because of this thing. Like, so much of our lives are in some kind of connection to or service to other people, systems that we're part of. And that creates informs and creates what we do, what we're doing every day, and how we use our bodies and how we use our minds and hearts and what we make in the world and what we participate in. And so for me, it just feels like a really deep job of integrating this part, this broken part, into the things that I'm contributing to, the things that I'm up to, however small they are. And because the place that I'm feeling into is what it is, it really doesn't matter whether that thing is running a large company or taking the children to school or, I don't know what else, being somebody in a shop or whatever thing is that we're up to, however small, however large. In this place, the order of all of that is the same, as in the hierarchy of all of that is the same. Like, nothing is more important than anything else. And we can be wholeheartedly in whatever it is that we're doing. And that's partly, this is the gift of this place, is that it doesn't make assessments of how important anything is. It kind of brings everything to ground zero. Because as you're saying, in the knowledge and feeling of the fact that we are going to lose everything, it's all turns into dust in the end. It's kind of got that impermanence feel to it that really has me question everything and see through a lot of stuff. And see through the patterns that have me avoid this thing, this place. And so from this place, I can see all the ways much more clearly that I avoid it, because I'm thrown into this place in as often a way as my life affords, from whatever work I'm doing internally or whatever things I'm reading, whatever relationships I'm cultivating. And being thrown there is... it's also a way of seeing, and a way of seeing myself much more clearly, and seeing all of the strategies of avoidance and pushing something away and defending and lashing out, and all of those things become visible from here, because from here it does feel defenseless. So there's not so much invested when I'm in this place, there's not so much invested in me being right, for example. Being right becomes way less important and way less relevant. And it really kind of recalibrates me on the inside to let this really be real in all these different areas of my life.
I realize that it's one of the things that your words remind me of, both what you've written and what you're saying now is one of the ways in which I go to sleep to my own life and to the people that I love is when, as is very easy for me to do, I'm defending myself now because I realize in one way or another that ultimately I can't defend myself against anything. You know, in the end, this is the thing I was saying before, that your line about grief so gets straight to the heart of for me is I'm defending against that moment when I will no longer be able to hold on and whatever's happening will sweep over me. And I'm defending against the moment when I lose mm-hmm. the people I love the most. And I'm defending against it now. And I can spin off into endless. I've got brilliant ways of defending both, you know, both numbing myself down so I don't feel the depth of my own love and heartbreak for the people who I care about, but also getting self-righteous about how right I am and how wrong other people are, or getting myself really, 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 really busy, or getting frozen. They're all, in one way or another, they're all actually defenses against the same thing. And they're the defenses not actually about what's happening right in this moment.
No.
They're defenses about what I'm afraid will happen when I'm no longer in charge. You know, when I no longer have any sense, any agency of my own life. Maybe at the last moment of my own life, that moment that we have to, we have no choice but to let go. So I know how easy that is. I also know what a gift it is to give up defending here. Because it allows us into the relationship that you're talking about. It also allows us, you know, to be joyful, to be heartbroken, to be available for, to be brave enough to step out of the confines of what we or other people might think might like in order to do something that's really important.
Yeah.
And it's all somehow a kind of pushing ourselves away from the deeper set of things that we're frightened of, and at the same time pushing ourselves away from just this person that I love right here. And can we just be messily in contact with one another? And
yeah.
So it's hard to see sometimes that that's what's happening.
Absolutely. I'm just struck by the word contact as well. You know, I think sometimes because of this, contact is so hard. You know, really genuinely contactful, intimate relationship with one another in all of our vulnerability can be, I think, excruciating was the word. And it does feel like that. And so, of course, it's easier to have a fight than be like that. Of course, it's easier to numb out than be like that. Like, it's really, really understandable, all of the strategies that we have. And each of us will have our own different flavor of that. And I also, though, believe in the cultivation of this place. I really believe in the, if we can allow ourselves contact with this, and in the moments where we're broken open and made vulnerable by life, if we can watch and observe and stay present to the defenselessness and the vulnerability of it, I really do feel like this realm is filled with the gifts that we're searching for in maybe all the wrong places. You know, there is so much life in our non-defended place, and yet our defense feels like we kind of got to hold on to it for life, otherwise we might die. And I think the stronger the defense, the stronger the possibility of contact with this place is, in a way.
Yeah, that's right.
The ego is really trying for this not to happen, and so we can be sure that when we're in our most triggered space, we're also right next to this space too. And to also have faith in that agitated, reactive something space, to know that it's right in contact with this place all the time. And really, this is when we're like that, we are really avoiding to the very end by this, you know, hanging on by the skin of our teeth kind of thing. And to know that right there, just next to that feeling of terror or oblivion or rage or frustration or non-forgiveness, lies this beautiful, light, open, disorientating place that is really what I experience as life itself. Or I've even said the word God in here. You know, there's something very, very opening about this, opening to the point of it opens me to something that I actually don't know what it is. You know, it's not of my personality in a way, it's of some other thing. And to allow that divinity in that is other than my everyday defendedness and habitual patterns feels like part of my conversation anyway with whatever divinity is, whatever God is, whatever creation is. And so it feels like it is a kind of a gateway that's always there, a benevolent, inviting, terrifying gateway that for some reason in my life right now keeps appearing all the time. So I'm really very glad to just be able to share this and have a space where it's welcome and hopefully meaningful to some people as well. And Justin, thank you for your general wish to connect with and entertain whatever the things are that are important to me and in my inner experience. Just always, I feel you're always moving in and moving in and moving in. And I'm really, really, really grateful for that.
You're welcome, Lizzie. Well, thank you for bringing this to us. And I'll say one last thing about it, about the poem. Thank you for bringing in what for many people is challenging language when you say God and divinity, when you, as well as the personal experience, you give us a way into that which is not us, mm-hmm. whatever we choose to call it, or that which we are from. Mm-hmm. It's courageous writing.
Thank you. So I'm just seeing our time and thinking it's probably a lovely spot to finish in. So this has been a Third Space project of Turning Towards Life. And one little thing to mention is that Justin is teaching our Coaching to Excellence program in January. And if you would love to be with Justin, which you should love to be with him because it's very beautiful being on that program with him. It's a 2-day program. It's in London. And please reach out if you have a wish to join. And even if the financial part of things are hard, we always, always talk to everybody about their participation. So please sign up if you'd like to. I think there are a couple of spots left. And we will see you next week at 9 a.m. with a source that Justin's going to choose for our 60-somethingth version of Turning Towards Life. And we are wishing you a very lovely Sunday, and thank you so much for joining us in all of this smashedness that this poem invites. So we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye.